Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so as you know, I'm a bit tired, not 100% this evening. And whenever you have to give a Dhamma talk, always try and find something which is not the same old, same old, same old. Now, obviously, there has to be some of the same old because there's only a certain amount of new stuff which you can ever think about. And it's always the same Dhamma just being put in different ways. But just it came to my mind during one of the interviews, one of the monks said to me, they said, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I said, marvelous, well done, congratulations, very good. Exactly, what a great insight that is. And I thought I'd get the whole talk around this. So the whole idea of thinking you've got to be doing something, that is just part of the delusion of a sense of self, which has to justify its existence. That you have to be achieving something, you have to be contributing, you have to be somehow fulfilling some goals or aspirations or some expectations which are put on you. And sometimes you ask, where did those expectations and those goals actually come from? Now that is something which is worth doing. Find out the causes of these things. You know, what are you doing here? I said, where did that whole question come from? And the whole question comes from, it's just all our conditioning. You know, that I've often sort of noticed that when you were young, and what are you doing? Nothing in particular. Oh, great, come and help me. And this is a problem here. That our life, our culture, does not allow sort of people just to be and do nothing and just to relax. We always have to be doing something, justifying our existence. And just to be able to do nothing is just seem to be some of the biggest evil, the biggest sin. In fact, you know, you all know some of the sayings in Christianity which I grew up with, the devil makes work for idle hands. Or the definition someone gave me of that type of Christianity, you know, the Calvinist, Protestant Christianity. They say Calvinism is the fear that somewhere, someone is happy. Which is, it's laughable, but, you know, there's some truth in that. So we've got to be doing something to get happiness. We've got to be doing something to justify ourselves. But it's not just our conditioning, because that conditioning reinforces this illusion of a self and me who is actually doing something. I look at all the 41 years, you know, which I've been a monk. What have I done? Nothing much. We say, well, Ajahn Brahm, look at all the meditation you've done, all the insights you've done, all the buildings, all the people you've taught. Yeah, I know, but you've taught hundreds of people, thousands of people, but, you know, have they got better because of it? They say they do, but I like to see the evidence. But anyway, just, you know, after a few more years, you die. After 100 years later, no one ever remembers you. So, you know, all of you, in 100 years' time, probably most people wouldn't even know you existed. You're dead, you're gone, just like those people who have gone before you. Sometimes, you know, when your grandparents, you know, you maybe remember them, but then, you know, actually you don't have offspring, but, you know, your nephews and nieces, they will forget each other. It's such a nice thing to know all of our great achievements will all be forgotten. So what are you doing here? What's the point of all of this? And so instead of always trying to achieve something, trying to do something, that is very much the way of the world, the way of samsara. all these people trying to get something. And a lot of times they do these things and they want awards or rewards or some acknowledgement, some certificate, you know, some medal, at least some thanks for all of the hard work which I have done. At least some acknowledgement. But you can see, what does those awards and medals and acknowledgement really mean? It really means that, you know, that you need these things because it just builds up the sense of a self. And, you know, the sense of a self-worth. And, you know, you should all know that that is a fool's game. It is a pursuit which will only lead to the assessment of this idea of a self. And most times people end up with, you know, you're not good enough. Not everyone can get the medal. Not everybody can score the winning goal in the FA Cup final for Liverpool. You just can't do that. And so everybody ends up being feeling that they're a loser. You know, in the worldly sense. You know, that, you know, we haven't got jhanas yet. I haven't even got nimittas yet. I can't even sit still for half an hour and watch the breath. Well, I'm hopeless. And all those people who feel like that, you're on the path. You're getting somewhere at last. Because all this idea of achievement and getting things and doing something, that is the problem. I know when I was asked, talking to a couple of people earlier, what should I talk about? I think Simon said, give a talk on hellfire and brimstone talk. Do something different tonight.
You know, zombie apocalypse.
That's already been done. Zombie apocalypse, or copalypse, or whatever it is. The zombie acropolis, that's in Greece somewhere. But if you want to see zombies, you know, I say go to a Vipassana retreat. See the walking meditation, that's zombies. That's zombie meditation. That's actually true. That, you know, this kid came up to me once, just after lunch, because, you know, his mum and dad had just taken him over to Jhana Grove to see the retreat place, and there were some people there doing the, you know, the slow walking meditation. And honestly, he came up to me afterwards, Achabab, because I've just been over to your retreat centre, there's zombies there. Because that's what it's like, you know, doing the zombie walking meditation very slowly, lifting, moving. And that's what it looked like to, you know, a 10 or 11-year-old kid. But the hellfire and brimstone, I can't do that. It's just not in my nature. And the reason is, you know, is because that whole idea of scaring you to actually to do something, it's just, it's not on. Because I don't want you to do things. You already do too much. The whole idea is just learning just how to be instead of how to do. That's why in that latest book, actually it's old already, when I say there's so many, you go around the world, you see very, very few human beings. You see a lot of human doings, going places, doing stuff. But how many people just being? So you're not doing things here. You don't know what you're doing. Indeed, you never know what you're doing, but you can know sort of where you're being. So it's all about, am I being here? Or am I doing something? If you're doing something, you've missed the path. If you're being here, you're making, creating the path. Present moment awareness, just being here. And figuring out what it's like to be here. Instead of always going places. Because when you're actually being here, instead of going places, when you're actually accepting this moment rather than trying to improve it, when you're trying to understand this five khandhas you take to be yourself, instead of trying to make them different and feeling bad, oh, my five khandhas are hopeless and terrible. There are only five khandhas, there's nothing else there. All cause and effect, it's not your fault, just conditioning, that's all. It's a wonderful thing to know that these five khandhas, they haven't got a core inside them called a self, an Ajahn Brahm, a me, a mine. So it's wonderful to realize that, because then you don't feel so responsible for all those failings in the past. And because you don't feel responsible, Now, in a deep, powerful way, that's one of the reasons why you'll never punish yourself by sending yourself to the hell realms or lower realms afterwards. That is one of the reasons why stream winners who've understood, at least they've understood and seen non-self, they will never get reborn in the lower realms. They never need to anymore. They don't feel that same sort of guilt and responsibility anymore. So it's a beautiful thing to know that. So this is what happens when you are being here. Here is where the Dhamma happens. This is where enlightenment happens. This is where insight happens, like being here. But doing insight or doing samatha or doing meditation, the whole thing just sucks to me. You don't do anything. So that's one of the reasons as why when people come and ask you, what are you doing? If you say nothing, you get in big trouble. Oh, come and give me a hand. So, you know, sort of, I've got all these tricks. I never actually say I'm doing nothing. Okay, it's lying. I say I'm just watching the trees go. That's one of my favorite ones, watching the trees grow. So, otherwise, people say, I'll come and help with washing up. No, I'm just watching the trees grow. Look, they're growing. If I come and wash up, I'll miss it. Because they do grow, but you've got to be there at the time. Because otherwise, you just turn your head around and miss it. You're not mindful, and then they grow. They do grow, because I've noticed that over these years. So that's one of my tricks. I'm just watching the tree grow. But please don't use that on me. If I need your help, need something offered, please don't say, sorry, Ajahn Brahm, I'm watching the trees grow. Because I invented that, so I've got the rights to that. You've got to invent your own excuses, okay? So, but it's important just to have this idea of being rather than doing stuff and getting things done. Getting things done. Oh, gee, that's just such a fool's idea. Because all this stuff you're trying to get finished, and nothing ever gets finished. How many times, all the anagarikas, how many dishes have you washed up since you've been here? And you wash them up and you dry them and you put them away. What happens? Someone uses it and gets dirty again. After you just clean them. Look, you know, you've put a lot of work into cleaning those dishes, so you should put a sign up there. Leave my dishes alone. Don't make them dirty. I've already cleaned them enough times. Of course, that's ridiculous. But you can actually see that things never get done and finished. Monasteries. When I saw Venerable Hasopanya and Karunika today at the funeral, just as I said, are you going to come to the talk this evening? I said, no, we're busy. We've got some more stuff to do this afternoon. Where are you going this afternoon? Bunnings. I don't know what it is with monastics. They spend more time in Bunnings than the meditation hall. Well, not quite. I'm exaggerating. But we're almost finished. At the end of the project. Well, I just laughed at them. Projects don't end. They just keep going on. It's samsara. Just the wheel goes round and round and round. You build something, then you've got to maintain it. And then you maintain it until it falls apart, you've got to build it again. And people here were just, they've been pushing me. They were telling me, said, look, how many people are coming here for lunch, this race retreat? The hall is getting full, the Dana Hall, even on Mondays and Tuesdays, let alone the weekends. So we have to build a bigger hall. No, look, you've got to think outside the box. Instead of having a bigger Dana Hall, what can we do? We can actually be more strict with people. We can actually put a charge for feeding us. That will reduce the numbers who come here. $10 is the privilege of coming to feed the monks. I don't know, but anyway, it's okay. So look, it's like widening the roads, you know, in the cities. You widen the roads and you get more traffic. You build a bigger Dhan hall, and you know what's going to happen. You get more people coming up to feed us. And so monks like me will get more fat. So if you want to keep me slim, just don't build a bigger Dhana hall, please. But, you know, the whole point is that these things never finish. Until you say, okay, enough, it is finished. What's done is finished. I'm just going to be here. And all this unfinished business. I'm going on a retreat next week. And the thought came up, I better get ready for the retreat. And the thought came up again, no, you are ready. But I've got to finish off all the loose ends, wash my robes, tidy up. No, good enough. You're on a retreat, no one's going to smell you. So you can leave it alone. So all this stuff which, you know, you start to think, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, do something else. And you find if you start like that before you even go in retreat, you know, you're going to be doing that during the retreat. Okay, retreat, 15 days. I've got to get this done. First of all, I'm going to get nimittas done. Okay, tick off nimittas, then jhanas, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth. They've got to get psychic powers, tick them off. And then people are actually like that, you know, ticking off stuff. And they're having their, in the monastic life or in their life, having their, what's it called, bucket lists. That's right, bucket lists. All the things they're supposed to do and finish before they die. So I've got my bucket list, and number one on top is to abandon all bucket lists. Get that out of the way first of all, and then you're finished. Isn't that wonderful? Get all craving and desires out of the way first. When all cravings and desires, all wanting, is out of the way first of all, wow, then I'm finished. I don't have to do things anymore. Because I am content. And the wonderful thing to realize is you don't have to have freshly washed robes to get into jhana. You don't need everything tidy and clean. You don't have to get everything out of the way. Just even a funeral today. I've done many funerals, but I remember just when I was having to do the will for, I was the executor of the will of Brian Creek. And he actually planned his death. He committed suicide. So he planned it, but he didn't finish everything. Like, I had to finish it, executor of the will, just figure out this account and that account. You're thinking if he's going to kill himself, you know, out of compassion for me, he would actually, you know, settle everything first of all, cancel his RAC membership, cancel this or cancel that to make life easier for me. He didn't do that. Because there's always stuff keeps going on and people just don't know how to stop. Except if you have some understanding of the Dhamma. And the understanding of the Dhamma is you just stop. Even though there's lots of things still need to be done. You stop running after the carrot in that simile of the carrot and the donkey. Because that's what happens. If I did a fire and brimstone talk, it'd be like the stick. If I started just talking about the bliss of jhanas and the amazing bliss of being released and all that sort of stuff, that's a carrot. The carrots and the sticks neither work. You beat the donkey with a carrot. I go, hey, FIFA, okay, give me a break. I beat the donkey with a stick, not a carrot. That was an honest mistake. I never sort of premeditated that. You beat the donkey with a stick, it doesn't move. You put a carrot in front of its mouth, and it just follows it but never catches the carrot. That's our life. You see the carrots which, you know, you've got in front of yourself now. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to get? What carrot are you running after? And, you know, you've run after that for the whole of your life. Never catch it. This is a brilliant thing with the Dhamma, the Buddha. Because sometimes people say, look, Ajahn Brahm, all this doing nothing, just being, and, you know, stop trying to achieve things, all of that. But if I did that, I wouldn't get anything. You know, I've got to put some effort into my life. Otherwise I'll be sleeping all day and I just... You don't actually sleep all day. Try it if you wish. But that just really is a lot of suffering. You know, you feel just dull and even the body is not good. So instead, you know, we find that there is some peace and happiness. And that peace and happiness comes when we really do stop. Stop thinking, stop fantasizing, stop reaching out for things, stop chasing carrots, and just be. be in this moment. It's like the Dhamma is trying to teach us every moment. It's right in front of us, trying to teach us something. But what do? We try and grab something else. We're running away rather than staying here listening to the lesson of life. And when life, you know, gives you some pain or difficulty, you know, like a hay fever or like a gastritis or a cancer or whatever it is, what do people do? They try and cure it. Yeah, sure enough, it's okay to cure it, but learn from it first. When it hurts, when it's tired, when you're depressed, when you sort of feel yucky, learn from it. It's teaching us the Dhamma. It's one of the reasons why I was telling the Jhana Groovies the Emperor's Three Questions. I always find that such a powerful, deep teaching. Now, it's not the most important time, it's the only time. The only time that ever, ever is right now. Not sort of trying to get it tomorrow or worrying about where you're going to go tomorrow or what time you have to get up, Venerable Chanda, to go down to Bridgetown tomorrow. Leave that till tomorrow morning. Now's the most important time. And whatever you're experiencing right now, whatever's in front of your mind, is the most important. For me, my itchy nose, that's right in front of me. That's the most important thing in the whole world. And I care for it, rather than trying to get rid of it. Because I'm learning about the nature of this body. Just like it said in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, when I was chanting that, I don't know if you heard, but I was laughing to myself. Now this body, you know, it is an abhadaya. It's abhadaya is like, in Thai, it means like sickness, apart, means you're ill. It's an irritation, it's a burden. The Buddha was saying that. So what do you expect? You know, you can't, you know, do anything about that. If it was yours, it would not be an irritation. You could do something about it. And yeah, you do some things about it, take some antihistamines or you know, try and avoid the pollen or something, whatever it is, but that doesn't help. Sooner or later, something will come from outside. If you don't get hay fever, you'll get worms. If you don't get, because a few monks have got worms, by the way, and the murderers. And that's some, you know, some of the monks who actually took their medicine to get rid of the worms were vegetarians. That's hypocrites. So anyway, I'm only joking. It's good to do those things. But we should have actually put them in the chanting book. Venerable Mudu's worms, may they get a good rebirth. Sorry. But just like whatever is in front of you, my laughter is the most important thing in the whole world. So we're with it, rather than trying to get rid of it. And then actually you get a lot of actually insight and understanding. The Dhamma is teaching you right now. And the kindness to it. When you're kind to it, well, you find that it gets very peaceful and happy. And all the negativity and suffering tend to vanish. And actually you do start to lose things. Things vanish and disappear. And that's just a wonderful thing with the Buddha's teachings. That if you don't fight things, if you don't run away from them, you learn from them. And just like learning what Mara is, as soon as you know what Mara is, Mara goes away and vanishes. The monk, the nun, the Anagarika, the Jhana Groovy knows me and just leaves. And I've experienced that so often. It's just one of the most wonderful psychological insights of the Buddha. You don't get rid of problems by fighting them or chasing them away. You get rid of psychological problems, physical problems, defilements in the mind. You get rid of them by understanding them, knowing them. I know you, depression. I know you, irritation, anger. I know you, greed. And how can you know these things? You have to be with them when they're happening. You have to allow the present moment to be. Whatever you're experiencing right now is the most important. Learn from it. Just like, you know, when I was a school teacher, sometimes you'd be teaching somebody and people weren't paying attention. They were thinking about what they were going to do, you know, Friday afternoon, you know, when school was over. They weren't here, listening. And of course, they didn't do well. But if you're really here, you know, when the lesson of life is happening, rather than sending your mind somewhere else or trying to get rid of this or wanting something else, if you're actually really here, you learn so much. So a lot of the practice, you know, of simple mindfulness is being here. A lot of the practice of restraining the hindrances is just not having this desire to go somewhere else, not having this ill will, not having this sloth and torpor because, you know, that's another escape or restlessness. You're with things. And that's one of the reasons why we restrain, lessen, subdue these five hindrances so we can be mindful, we can be aware of this present moment. And as you become more aware of this present moment, you allow it to teach you. As you pay attention, you learn so much. And one of the things you do learn, when you don't do things and waste your energies, you become alive. You don't become alive in the future or in the past. The past is dead. And the future is fantasy land. It's like Hollywood. It's like, you know, myths. But where life actually is right now. You become alive right here. And by that, I mean you become more aware, more awake. And that's the great thing about this practice. You do get results, which you never expected. When you try to develop mindfulness, you never can. When you're just right here, right now, not developing, not doing anything, but just being, your mindfulness starts to really, really increase in its power. You're here. You're still, not doing things, not racing away, learning from this moment. And it's like the more you stay here, the more powerful your mind becomes. Just, it's like everything gets more intense. You turn up the volume, you turn up the power, the wattage of the lights. Everything becomes more sensitive. And that's such a wonderful part of our practice, to become more aware of what's happening around. I know some of the jhana gurus were saying, well, if we get really more aware, we're still in the world of the five senses, watching the beautiful flowers and the birds. And the, you know, the, it's a beautiful time of the year right now, if it wasn't for the pollen. There's always something goes wrong. You know, people in Australia, they love it. It's got these beautiful beaches and they love surfing. It'd be wonderful if it wasn't for the sharks and the jellyfish and everything else. You know, sometimes you get so close to perfection. Something happens and just it's not quite perfect enough. That's our world for us. So anyway, here we are, just, you know, just with our mindfulness starting to increase. And that becomes so joyful. And looking at the birds or the little kangaroos with the new joeys with their heads poking out. I haven't seen, you know, one of them come out yet and run around. But I always enjoy that time of the year. See the young joey bouncing around like it's on one of these pogo sticks when I was young. And it's amazing just how bouncy they are. And I enjoy that. And every year, because maybe it's because this is the time of the year you're most mindful going on retreat. And everything is beautiful. And I thought that was going to be attachments. Until I realized, no. This is just because your mindfulness is taking off. Because of stillness, because of doing nothing. Because of just learning from this moment that if you do nothing, you don't react, you're not encouraging the five hindrances, but you are restraining these five hindrances, this pancha nivarana, when they're being restrained, you literally wake up. And as you wake up, it's so easy to meditate. It's one of the reasons, because I'm a meditation teacher, sometimes I can't watch the breath, I can't do loving kindness, I can't do this, I can't do that. No preparation yet. Get your mindfulness really strong, first of all, by doing nothing, by just being here. And when your mindfulness really gets to a certain level, you're really awake. And you know that level because whatever you look at is joyful and happy. Just, you know, even looking at a little rock on the path, it's gorgeous. This is why when we develop such mindfulness based on not doing anything, restraining, not doing stuff, but restraining, relinquishing, making peace, being kind, being gentle, when that's what we do, now you find that the mind wakes up. And when it wakes up, mindfulness increases in power. And you find with that powerful mind, it's so easy to meditate. If you want to watch the breath is so easy and it's beautiful to watch. You want to just watch your body, and it's incredible. All the stuff going on in your body, in your nose, whatever it is. You know, you want to sort of contemplate anything. Your mind is awake, ready to do that. Once you experience things like that, you know that just trying to contemplate the Dhamma with a mind which hasn't got strong mindfulness, you're just wasting time. It's like trying to dig a hole with a spoon, you know, in clay. You just can't do it. You need something sharp and tough. And strong mindfulness is necessary. And that strong mindfulness gets more and more powerful. And this is where you get into the fun part of monastic life. When the mindfulness is really, really, really strong, meditation is just like child's play. And just the mindfulness is strong, you can watch whatever you want. And as you watch it, just peacefully, not wanting anything, not doing things, not trying to reach things, but just for the fun of it. Just like watching a little Joey run around. It's just fun just to watch the breath come in and go out, or watch your feet move on the meditation path. It's just joyful. You're having a good time. And that's where the meditation takes off. And all this stuff which I say about jhanas and stuff, now you get there. As long as you follow the instructions and stop doing too much. Learn how just to be. Wake up. No expectations. Takes you out. No goals. No sort of things which you have to finish off. See if you can just be here. I really tried hard to this monastery and even Jhana Grove to make it so comfortable for you. You don't have to do too much. I wish I could arrange it for myself. I didn't do too much. You know, because somebody asked me that in the Metta Sutta, where we have all these translations of, you know, first of all it was being unburdened with duties. Or the second one was, having few duties. But it means actually few duties, apakicho, few things you have to do. And that's one of the great teachings of the Buddha, trying to lessen the things you have to do. And so what I've done is just try and make a nice monastery and all the other monks who have helped me out so you don't have to do too much. So, you know, there's clean a little bit here, sweep a little bit over there. But what happens? As soon as you lessen everybody's duties, then they're free to have their own duties, their own projects and their own stuff. Oh, come on, monks. You have an opportunity to live a range retreat, a few things to do, a few duties. And just instead, just lots of time just to be. Watch the trees grow. Relax. Not doing anything, not going anywhere, just being. Just making peace in this moment, being kind, being gentle. This moment, the most important thing in the whole world. Right now. And every time you want to do something, see you, Mara. only you trying to get me to make things different, to improve things. Just like you tried to tempt the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, or the Buddha to be a world-turning one. You can do so much for the world. I know you, Mara. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to be. Just and allow the Dhamma to unfold. Letting go of craving, of wanting. Learning how to be still instead of learning how to be so active. And see the joy of stillness, the beauty, the power of stillness. This is a Dhamma of stillness. That's why the Buddha said that very few people will ever understand or appreciate things like the meaning of Sabba Sankhara Samatha, the stilling of all activities. The whole idea of that, people think that's just lazy, but they can't do it anyway. What people take as laziness is not real laziness. Laziness means that I'm just fantasizing, dreaming, just doing things which have no real use. Watching the TV, listening to the radio, just whatever it is. That's laziness. What people think is laziness, but the real laziness is being so still that you, the sense of self, it's just disappearing. And it's so hard to do, because if you're still, if you're not doing anything, your whole identity starts to disappear and vanish. The person you always believe yourself to be was a doer, an achiever, or a failure. You always give yourself a name by what you did or what you failed to do. It's all built on doing or failing to do. And if you actually replace that by stillness, your identity vanishes. You can't give a name to yourself or an identity to yourself. You can't judge yourself or grasp yourself when you do nothing. When you're still, you vanish. And that's the whole beauty of this path. It's a scary part of the path, but the beauty of it. When you just sit there and watch the trees, you just basically don't exist anymore. You're not doing anything. You're not you don't belong to the world of doers, of doctors who do stuff, gardeners, accountants, teachers who do stuff, scholars, translators, builders. These are all things people who do stuff. So monks, we don't do monk business. We don't do any business. We stop and be and disappear. And that's wonderful when we start to do things like that, or rather not do things. We vanish. And the sort of peace and the joy and the profundity when you experience things like this, at last you find this is the Dhamma. This is a taste of freedom when you start to disappear. You get still, you get awake, you get happiness. You get this profound experiences. Wow, this is all that stuff which I search for in the world. I get right here, sitting in my room, just being peace, doing nothing, just being still, not wanting anything in the whole world. Oh, what bliss. And that's how it feels. Grows and grows and grows and grows. You want something, you do something, you'll always have trouble. And you'll start to think, what am I doing here? Instead of asking yourself what you're doing here, what are you not doing? How are you not doing? How much not doing are you not doing in this monastery? Those are much more profitable questions. How still are you? How many moments of the day are you here? Don't judge, you're here and it's not quite nice, I'm dull, I'm bored. Don't judge these moments, learn from them. Allow them to be, and they teach you. You don't have to contemplate them. They teach you whether you're contemplating them or not, as long as you are aware of them, as long as you are here. So don't run away from the Dhamma doing something else. stop doing things and learn the Dhamma by being here. And it opens up. You become still, peaceful, meditation becomes the easiest thing in the world. Insight, understanding, joy, wisdom, it all comes to you. Chasing the carrot, the carrot's always in front of you, never quite in reach. You stop and the carrot comes into you, not just one carrot, a whole bunch of carrots, mushy peas, chips, fish, they all come into you when you stop. You go chasing them, you can smell them, you can see them, but you can't reach them until you stop. So that's the way of the Dhamma. Learning how to stop, make peace, be kind, be gentle. And just learn how to be. Next week I'll be on retreat. I won't be teaching. Or maybe I will be teaching. I just pass by my cave and say, I wonder what he's doing. I'll tell you. Just watching the trees grow. Thank you for listening.
Sadhu, 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 anumodana.
Very good.
Patipano.